industry with the large penetration of solar, wind, and energy storage. We do a lot of renewable integration work as well. And so I'm Nick Wintermantle, principal at Estrade, and I have Chase Winkler as well on the call. So he'll be here to answer any of the complex questions today. Next slide, Nick. So an ELCC study, you know, really the purpose of it is that we know we have energy limited resources such as energy storage or demand response, which have limits to them compared to, say, a fully dispatchable resource like a CT where the operators can run them 24 hours a day, notwithstanding a forced outage. And then there's also non-dispatchable resources, which we consider wind and solar. They're really just subject to their hourly output, or actually minute-to-minute output based on weather. And so we need to understand from a resource adequacy standpoint, what is their reliability contribution compared to a fully dispatchable resource. So the analysis we performed that will eventually feed into the IRP and the modeling was all based on the load and resources in 2023. And we start there, and then we start looking at different penetrations of each of these.
That's right. These guys are wild.
Next slide.
They say it's unreliable.
So effective load carrying capability, ELCC study, what you're really trying to do is understand, as I said, what is the reliability contribution of these resources. And so the method that we use, we will get the system to a specific reliability metric. So in this instance, for PNM, we're still tying to the 0.2 LOLE that we used in the last IRP. So we'll get the system to 0.2 LOLE, and then we'll add this energy limited resource or this non-dispatchable resource. And when we add that resource, we're going to get reliability benefit. Maybe we go from 0.2 down to 0.15. And then we're going to figure out how much load do I increase on the system to get back to 0.2. And that would be the reliability or the load carrying capability of that resource. And so that's really the overall high-level method that we're going to use for all the analysis that we perform. Jump to the next slide. So Nick Phillips showed this earlier in his presentation, and really this is just trying to show when is the resource adequacy risk. He talked a lot about what happened in California. PNM is very similar to the resource adequacy seen in California. As the solar and wind begin to ramp down, the net load, which is on this chart, will ramp up in hours 17 through, say, 22, or really when the system's going to be at risk from a capacity shortage standpoint. When we look at our base case for 2023, which includes the replacement resources that are expected to come on, you can see the red curve is when our LOLE events occur. So on the right-hand axis, you can see the percent of the LOLE events that occur across the hours of the day. So this is no surprise. We've known this is coming. We add that renewable, and we create this the duck curve and push this net load out to later in the day. Next slide. And we'll camp out on this one. As Nick Phillips said.
I'm going to go back to that previous slide, and I think maybe this is a reasonable time to address Bruno's question on the operating reserves. And I've got a thought on it. Maybe you can chime in on it as well. Given that we're looking at reliability from an LOLE standpoint via the servo modeling, and this picture really shows some of that really well. Maybe you can describe a little bit better the way CERVM does stochastic analysis around variations in weather. But ultimately, because the model is looking at variations in weather and solar output and load, you will require it in order to maintain that LOLE number, increasing or varying level of operating reserves in order to get the system to an LOLE that's acceptable. Is that correct? And do you mind expanding on that a little bit relative to Bruno's question on reserves for solar?
Yeah, no, I think what you said is fair. I'd probably add to that, you know, when you think about the intermittency of solar and wind, kind of the volatility from minute to minute or hour to hour, you certainly need to carry additional operating reserves for that. We typically look at that more in our what we call LOLE flex, or really just a flexibility violation metric. And so it's a little bit aside from this LOLE cap and ELCC method. So here we're really wanting to understand capacity shortages. What more operationally needs to be looked at is when I add all this wind and solar, I'm going to get additional volatility, and I need to make sure I carry enough operating reserves on the system. And, you know, as PNM has added, are planning to add substantial battery, what we see in our modeling is that the flexibility violations tend to be addressed pretty well as we add that fast gas CT type capacity or fast ramping battery. So I don't know if that answers the question, but I think from an operational perspective, you certainly need to take that into account. When you think about kind of what the NERC standard is, it's typically your just single largest contingency. You have to carry what they call contingency reserves. And then above those reserves, or what I think about is maybe additional load following or something else to handle the intermittency that you see in solar and wind.
Thanks for that, Nick. Sorry to put you on the spot with that one. And we can visit that one a little bit after we conclude the ELCC presentation as well. And then maybe Nick and Andrew with E3 have some thoughts on it as well. So I think you'd asked me to move on to the next slide. And so here we are.
Yeah, sure. So again, these, as Nick Phillips said, these are preliminary. This is kind of our first pass. And overall, our intuition says these make a lot of sense. We're validating, especially when we think about the higher penetration level, thinking through that, we're really wanting to validate this. But let me explain really what you're looking at here. Let's look at the wind first, which is the first five or six rows. So with 607 megawatts in that first row, that's really what the existing wind would look like in 2023. So we want to value, what are we getting in 2023 out of our existing wind? What's the reliability contribution of that compared to a fully dispatchable CT? And when we run the model, we get about 30% for that first block of wind. As we continue to add wind, and in this scenario, we are adding very similar wind, so it's kind of that eastern wind that has very good capacity factor in the PNM system. We see that drop off. You start covering those risk resource adequacy hours, and you can only do so much, maybe pushing the LOLE to another hour. So you see it declining, but I would say, you know, the 25 to 30% range is kind of what we're seeing on the wind for the existing, and then you see those numbers decline. Similarly for solar, you know, PNM is already starting at 1,000 megawatts by 2023. If you were to think about the first couple hundred, certainly that ELCC would have been much higher because you wouldn't have had this pushing of net load out to the peak. Now that we've got, or to the late evening hours, now that we're starting at 1,000, we're seeing this ELCC value, the average, be 14%. And that declines as we go up. We ran it all the way up to 2,500 megawatts. You can kind of see the incremental value of that last megawatt was essentially zero. And so when I think about the incremental, that's just understanding that for that solar going from 1,026 to 1,200, it's just the value of that next 174 megawatts in that example. And then we look at battery. We went from battery with the current replacement portfolio. We're expecting to have 300 megawatts of battery, and this is all four-hour storage on this in this table. So essentially that first block, we really have created this narrow firm load shed area in our net load. So that first block of battery flattens that pretty well, right? As we increase battery, we're going to flatten that net load shade more and more to where all of a sudden we're going to need longer duration batteries. So that's why we see this capacity value decrease. And we're kind of circling these last three or four on the battery. We just want to make sure we're comfortable with the decline that we're seeing here. But that's one of the areas where we're trying to go back and validate and make sure we're comfortable with what the model's producing there. And lastly, we have DR. So the demand response resources, you know, they're a four-hour-a-day product, and essentially they're not dispatchable like battery. Once you turn on that DR, it's on for 4 hours, kind of at the full program capacity. So it's a little bit more limited than, say, the battery, which can be charged or dispatched to a specific megawatts of ramping capability. You definitely have more control with the battery than you do the DR. But you can see the values there. We went from 60 megawatts, which is really what's planned for the system in 2023, and we ramped it up to 180 just to kind of see, hey, this four-hour DR product, what do we think it's worth compared to a fully dispatchable DT? So, I mean, I'm expecting these numbers will change, but not drastically. We'll probably still be in this range as we continue our validation. And I think that's all I have today, Nick.
Thanks. And so there's a question just came in from Jason Marks, and he wants to know, is there an analysis of the interaction of the resources? And so, you know, I'll start off by saying that's still in the works.